Welcome to Cast of Wonders, the fiction audio magazine for young adults featuring stories of the fantastic. I'm Graham Dunlop. Today we present part one of Cockatrice Girl Meets Statue Boy by Willow Fagan. Willow lives in Portland, Oregon. They're genderqueer, which for them means that they feel more like a pirate princess than like a man or a woman. Their fiction has appeared in Fantasy Magazine, Behind the Wainscot, and the year's Best Science Fiction and Fantasy 2011. To read more about their writing and adventures, go to willowfagan.livejournal.com. Check the show notes for details. Your narrators today are Mr. Alasdair Stewart and Ms. Marguerite Kenner, who should by now be very familiar names to listeners of this podcast. And now, we've a tale to tell.
Cockatrice Girl Meets Statue Boy by Willow Fagan. Having been born in vinegar and conceived by a viper, Cockatrice Girl knew how to hurt people. The fact that Statue Boy was immune to her signature trick was no great obstacle. She had a dozen poisons in her snake eyes, 100 conversational traps hidden beneath her skirt, between her long chicken legs. None of these were as reliable as transforming someone to stone, of course. Statue Boy's invulnerability made Cockatrice Girl want to hurt him even more. She stayed up much too late, chewing her claws as she drew diagrams of stone-crushing machines and plotted stratagems. Oh, how she loathed him. But there was something else about Statue Boy, something which made Cockatrice Girl want to cuddle with him, to gaze into his calm grey eyes. These urges, as unexpected as watermelons in the dead of winter, were more dangerous than stone which could move and speak and see. So, as much as she wanted to hurt him, Cockatrice Girl instead decided to avoid Statue Boy, to keep to her familiar paths and haunts. Cockatrice Girl had met Statue Boy on one of her spontaneous middle-of-the-night jaunts. Sometimes she just needed to be in motion, fast, to feel wave after wave of night wind caressing her cheeks, to be someplace completely new, where the people had not yet learned to guard themselves against her poison, her sly tongue, with their preemptive silences or impenetrable politeness. On this particular night, she drove west out of the valley, over the tridge, past the Grove of Heads and onto a wide plateau. In the untrustworthy glow of her headlights, the ground appeared to be featureless, a grey repetition. The roads in this place were all perpendicular. They formed a grid, but Cockatrice Girl could see no reason for any of the crossings. Back home, in the valley, the roads were serpentine or strangely angled. She could remember the quirks of those roads, savour the unfolding of each path's unique squiggle. Here she became hopelessly lost. Once she realised how lost she was, she resolved to simply drive in a straight line until she reached somewhere, some edge. This proved to be impossible. Straight lines were anathema to her, child of a viper that she was. After 10 minutes, she began to sweat uncontrollably, and soon the wheel slipped in her hands, forcing her to turn. Finally, her eyes almost a blur, she came across an all-night diner, its sign glowing colourful against the grey. Statue Boy was her waiter. Then, his stone skin had been nothing more than a curiosity, an interesting tidbit to relate to her sisters later. After a restorative meal of poached eggs and strong coffee, Cockatrice Girl asked him for directions. She intended to humiliate him in some small way later to balance out his knowledge of her imperfection, his help. He sat across from her, though, and drew a map on a napkin. When he looked up, his eyes caught hers and held them for a full minute. His eyes were grey and stone, but there was such movement in them, the slow, relentless crawl of mountains across centuries and continents, the steady dance of the sea on a calm day, the stately procession of clouds across the sky. She had always thought of stone as completely motionless. She had stifled many lives by turning them into stone, and yet those eyes. Stone dripped, she had heard, in slow motion meted out in decades. The thought, his eyes, were abhorrent to her, and yet she could not stop looking. She was intoxicated, paralysed, infuriated. He returned her gaze as intently. What did he see in her eyes? "Your eyes are beautiful," he said, at last releasing her. "They're green like waterfalls, like snakes curling and uncurling with new skin, like the grass unravelling.
My eyes are poisonous, and I will devour you with them.
Let me suck the poison out of you with kisses. She threw her plate at him, but it shattered harmlessly. Statue Boy stood up and bowed to her. I have seen you. I will not forget. Neither will you. Cockatrice Girl leapt up, bruising both shins against the table. She hurled her glass, her fork, her knife, her spoon, the salt shaker at his retreating back. None of them made a dent. She grabbed the table and began to lift it. A loud cough brought Cockatrice Girl back to her senses. The fat woman at the next table was staring at her, horrified. She let go. What she should have done was feigned boredom, and that should have been easy, effortless. Her response is conditioned as a knee-jerk. The map that Statue Boy had drawn for her lay there still, audaciously white, the black lines dividing it into teeth. A mocking grin. Her fingers, her sharpened claws, longed to shred the napkin into meaningless pieces. But she needed the map to find her way home. She did not tell her sisters about him after all. Her sisters were older than she, and had been born human. The shattering of their mother, the bizarre violence of Cockatrice Girl's birth, had hardened both of them into kindred spirits. Beatrice, the eldest, had refused to cut or comb her hair until it tangled into a solid mass around her, a permanent veil. Flannery, the wilder of the two, had locked herself into freezer after freezer. Now her skin was as pale and as cold as ice, and her breath white clouds, even in the summer. Instead, Cockatrice Girl asked her sisters what they thought the most dangerous thing in the world was, and how one could defend themselves against it. Eyes, Beatrice said, stab them out, even yours.
But,
Cockatrice Girl pointed out,
you haven't gouged your own eyes out.
No one's perfect. I think that the most dangerous thing in the world, Flannery said, the deadliest, scariest, most treacherous thing I have ever heard of, is a butterfly. And the only way to be safe is to move every 3 months, so that you always live in winter.
Couldn't you just live in the Arctic?
Cockatrice Girl asked, irritated. She could never tell how seriously Flannery meant anything. The cold seemed to have addled her brains. No, no. No, no, no. No, the Arctic butterfly is the worst of them all. Springs spy in the fortress of ice like a dagger of melting.
What if...
Cockatrice Girl said.
The danger is a person.
Other people, Beatrice said, goes without saying. They're the most dangerous thing. You shouldn't live in your house, Flannery added. You should live in ours. Her two sisters lived in a cave beneath the abandoned school and amused themselves by playing ghosts with the terrified, delighted children who snuck in at night. Cockatrice Girl had neighbours. That horrified her sisters, although in her neighbourhood the yards were all immense. We make all the people we need, Flannery always said. She spent hours at a time illustrating imaginary companions with intricate frost. But Cockatrice Girl needed people to turn into statues. People who would believe her lies. People to betray. Paradoxically, the least human of the three sisters was the most social.
What if...
Cockatrice Girl said.
The most dangerous thing is inside of you somewhere.
The next time Cockatrice Girl encountered Statue Boy, he was working at her favourite coffee shop, the Bitchy's Brew. The Bitchy's Brew was a Riot Girl coffee shop / zine distro / neo-pagan shrine. She found the politics and the spirituality insipid, but she adored the atmosphere, loved to look at the girls with their bright metal piercings, to marvel at how they were simultaneously scars, souvenirs of pain, and weapons. Her own skin was impenetrable. When Cockatrice Girl saw his unmistakable grey flesh behind the counter, she once again flew into an uncharacteristic rage. She launched herself at him as if she believed her chicken legs gave her the ability to fly. Precarious, perched on the counter, she grabbed his head. His skin was astonishingly warm. She could not force him to move, could not smash his head down into the glass. Cassandra, he said, the trembling in his voice as much a surprise as his warmth had been. Please don't. She had thought him completely solid, an exoskeleton without organs.
I can hurt you.
She pressed her claws against his scalp to see if it would have any effect. Liquid, like wet concrete, oozed out. Statue Boy grimaced. Yes, please don't.
But I can't move you against your will.
She released the pressure from her claws, but kept her fingers on his head, arrayed like the spokes of a crown. And you can't stop me from moving.
I know.
For a moment, she could not recall what she was doing here. Sandra, please don't leave me. On top of the counter, her vantage point on the world was different. She sensed something important on the horizon and scoured the corners of the room for its approach. Could it be the danger? Could it be the defense against it? Before she could see anything, a door slammed shut. Cockatrice girl, get down from there now! It was Shannon, the owner. I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to ask you not to come back for a while. Shannon stood much calmer now, arms crossed, her back firm against the back door of the bitch's brew. Cockatrice girl did not have friends, but Shannon was a fond acquaintance, a woman she respected for her grit, her skill in the art of dueling tongues.
I can't believe you hired a man.
Cockatrice girl hissed.
What about smashing the patriarchy?
Shannon rolled her eyes. Don't be so second wave. Men aren't the enemy. Plus, it's an interesting question. Is Statue Boy a man? He wasn't raised by humans, so he hasn't had the years of patriarchal conditioning, which is what really matters, not the shape of your genitalia. Clearly, Shannon longed to discuss the implications for feminist theory. Cockatrice girl tuned out her ramblings. She wanted to say, I've turned many men into stone, and you never wanted to analyze that. So, like I said, he's a feminist.
He came on to me the first night we met. How feminist is that?
Shannon grinned. He told me about meeting you.
What? What did he tell you?
Oh, no, I know better than to tell you something which will piss you off. A letter from Statue Boy containing his words. Silent ambassadors arrived at her very doorstep. It was a love poem. She, of course, burnt it immediately. But she couldn't bring herself to throw the ashes away. They sat in a small urn, like the remains of something neither alive or dead. For the first few weeks, each Friday, another envelope would arrive, bearing the name Cassandra in Statue Boy's steady, blocky handwriting. Her name was not Cassandra. The only name she had needed or desired was Cockatrice Girl, Vixen of the Valley, mother of 1,000 stillborn statues. The intervals between the letters grew smaller. 2 a week, 3 a week, 1 every day. Cockatrice Girl imagined that the tempo would continue to accelerate until an avalanche of white letters poured out of her mailbox. This did not happen. Each time she found a new one, a delicious anger would fill her. She piled up the unopened envelopes in a box in front of the urn. Though Statue Boy had somehow managed to invade both her coffee shop and her home, the rest of her familiar landscape was still safe. However, she now found it boring. Hanging out with the vampires, the black market plastic surgeons, the professional brides, she discovered that the verbal repartee had become a stale dance of the same 3 steps, over and over. Even standing beneath the tridge with her sisters to gossip and watch the suicides fall had lost its thrill. She spent more and more time in her sprawling garden of statues, despite the fact that sitting there in the rows and rows of frozen grey figures, she kept imagining motion at the edges of her vision. One day, while she stood in her garden, her heart beat faster and faster until it was leaping from beat to beat, from fear to hope, from hope to fear. She expected it to reach a crescendo, for her very heart to fly out of her chest, up into the air and unfold into some miraculous new shape, like origami with organs. All that happened, though, was that she got lightheaded and had to prepare inside for some snake scale tea and a biscuit. Things could not go on like this. So Cockatrice Girl threw a party. She invited everyone she knew. Shannon and the Bitches Brew Girls, the exiles hiding out in the castle next door, those few of her exes who were still mobile, her sisters, the museum curators who paid her gobs of cash under the table, her rivals, enemies, colleagues, the floating mask she wanted to kiss, her specially trained pedicurist, everyone. Even the good fairy with her ridiculous pink wings. Even Statue Boy. She dusted off all the statues, aired out the secret passages. Beatrice hung bones from ribbons and covered every available surface with candles, while Flannery sang to herself and snuck into the walk-in freezer. Cockatrice Girl dismantled all the traps, except for the ones protecting her bedroom. She brought down the skull cups from the attic. At the Crossroads Market, she bought the most extravagant carnivorous plants she could find and an assortment of exotic grey fruit from the far north to make stone punch. For the punch bowl, she fed an enormous seashell to a boa constrictor, and then petrified the snake. Most importantly, she bought a vial containing the distilled essence of 100 years of rain.
part one of Cockatrice Girl Meets Statue Boy ends here. Can't wait to find out what'll happen at the party. And what is a cockatrice anyway? Drop by our forum and tell us. Visit www.castofwonders.org/forums and hit us with your feedback. Cast of Wonders is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. Share it, but don't change it or sell it. Theme is Appeal to Heavens by Alexei Nov from musicalley.com.